welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark LeBonier, bringing you an hour of mystery. Later on, a story from Edgar Allan Poe on suspense. But first, it's The Adventures of Ellery Queen, an ABC broadcast called The Armchair Detective, which you get to be by listening to this next episode, first heard on March 18th, 1948.
The following program is transcribed. Ellery Queen. In the interest of a safer American home, a happier American community, a more united state, the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Ellery Queen.
I dedicate this program to the fight against crime. Not only crimes of violence and crimes of dishonesty, but also crimes of intolerance, discrimination, and bad citizenship. Crimes against America.
American Broadcasting Company presents another case in the career of Ellery Queen, celebrated fighter of crime. As usual, Ellery invites you to match wits with him as he relates the mystery. And before revealing the solution, he gives you a chance to solve it. Tonight, Ellery's guest armchair detective, who will represent you home armchair detective, is the popular Hollywood columnist, Miss Sheila Graham. And now, Ellery Queen, your host for the next half hour.
Thank you, Paul Masterson. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You've heard me investigate crimes in just about every imaginable place. Well, our crime tonight took place in the strangest locale of all, right on my own radio program. I call it...
Paul. Ellery, hold it, will you?
What's the matter, Paul? What is it?
Ellery, you can't do this. You'll have to switch. Give us another case.
Oh, why?
Murder on the Queen show? Are you crazy? You'll scare the bejinkers out of people, Ellery. They'll think it's actually happening in this studio during the broadcast.
Very good point, Paul. Yes, very good. Ladies and gentlemen, I ask you to be sure and keep in mind throughout the next half hour that you're listening to a case from the past, a crime that occurred a long time ago. Satisfied, Paul?
Thanks, Ellery.
It's a case I've always called The Armchair Detective. Veteran Queen fans will recall that in the early days of our radio show, as today, I invited some well-known person to come to the studio and sit in the guest detective's armchair. Then, as now, it was usually fun. But on the night I have in mind, things didn't quite go in the usual way. That night, about 15 minutes before we were scheduled to go on the air...
Everybody got the cut?
I think so.
Still, how are we on time?
We'll have to pick up 15 seconds, Ellery.
Oh, sure.
Go on, Tess, and fill the mic again.
All right, coming next. Who is it tonight?
Dr. Monty McKing.
Who?
You know, the college professor who has his own radio show. McKing's English.
Oh. Correct English, crusader.
That's right.
Better brush up my grammar. After you, Nikki.
Thanks. Bill? Dr. McKing, Ellery Queen in the box.
How do you do, sir?
I'm almost afraid to answer, Dr. McKing. I might hang a participle or something.
Darling.
Oh, Rosemary, I'm sorry. My dear, may I present Mr. Ellery Queen?
How do you do, Mr. McKing?
And this character is my brother and business manager, Bud McKing.
Oh, hello there.
I think our paths have crossed in radio, Bud.
That's a small business. Say, Ellery, seeing that we're pals, how about tipping Monty off to tonight's solution?
Oh, sorry. Vern, we are rebuffed. Sorry, Ellery. My secretary, Miss Woolen. Woolen.
This is really a thrill, Mr. Queen. I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Queen fan. Oh, why isn't that nice,
Thank you, Miss Woolen. Oh, Dr. McKinney, we haven't too much time. Shall we go into the guest detective room?
Monty's to sit in a special room, Mr. Queen.
Right in here, Mrs. McKing. You see, we tried to duplicate a home address. Oh, Nikki, will you pour me a glass of water, please? My throat.
You know, you can't see the broadcast in this room.
Oh, is that so?
You just hear it, as you would in your own home.
Program's piped in here from the control room, Marty. You get it through that loud speaker.
Oh, how cool.
Oh, so I see, but at the proper time, Mr. Queen, I take it I extemporize in that microphone above the table?
Yes, Doctor. Yes, it's strictly an ad-lib spot. Immediately after my announcement on the air that I know who committed the crime, Nikki and I dash into this room from the studio, seat ourselves on the other side of the table from you, and then we
hold a three-cornered post-mortem over the corpse.
Not Dr. McKean's corpse, I hope.
Elsie, do I detect an unconscious secretarial wish to achieve my destruction?
Marty, I don't find that a bit funny.
Don't come, Rosemary.
But, Mrs. McKean, I didn't.
Oh, right, Nicky, yes. I should explain no one's allowed in this room but our guest of the evening. So, Nicky, if you'll show the rest of Dr. McKean's party into the client's booth.
Oh, certainly.
Now, if you get thirsty during the broadcast, Doctor, here's a pitcher of water right on the table.
Oh, yes, thank you.
Oh, Phil.
Yes, Ellery.
How about a quick level?
Whenever he's ready.
Uh-huh. All right, if you'll be seated, Dr. McKean, you and say something into the mic, if you at all, just the voice level set. Dr. McKean alone in the armchair detective's room. We went on the air with our program, and in due course, I reached the point in our mystery where I was able to say...
But, Ellery, do you mean to say...
Yes, Dad. Now I know who committed the murder. Nicky and I hurried to the armchair detective's room as usual. There was Dr. McKean, a little nervous, but otherwise himself. I said, into the table, Mike. And there, ladies and gentlemen, you have the mystery. Now, let's see what our guest armchair detective has to say, Nicky.
And tonight, ladies and gentlemen, our guest is the famous Dr. Monty McKean, founder and leading light of that popular radio program, McKean's English.
All I can think of at this moment, Dr. McKean, is McQueen's ignorance. You're too modest, Emery. You're not the worst offender by any means. Oh, you're sometimes guilty of ellipses.
Is that bad, Doctor?
But you usually avoid committing such truly foul crimes against our mother tongue as needless variants, irrelevant allusions, pleonasms, periphrasy.
Surrender. But to get away from the English language and how not to use it, Dr. McKean, I hear you're famous in a different sphere altogether.
Yes. You're said to be able to whip up a mean bouillabaisse, Doctor.
Oh, yes, Nicky. I am an enthusiastic amateur chef.
Doesn't your wife resent it?
On the contrary, Nicky. Mrs. McKean is only too happy to leave the solution of our household's culinary mysteries to me.
Ah, talking about solving mysteries, Dr. McKean.
Oh, dear. I find that drought has suddenly attacked my vocal cords.
Simple, we'll irrigate them. Nicky, will you oblige?
I'm way ahead of you, Ellis. Here you are, Dr. McKean. A nice, wet glass of water.
Oiled. Thank you.
Now, as soon as you're through oiling your larynx, Doctor, suppose you tell us who committed the murder in the police commissioner's office. Oh, what's the... don't let the water glass worry you, Doctor. Who committed the
murder... Sorry,
too nervous to speak, eh, Dr. McKean? Well, it happens to the best of us. In just a moment, I'll give the solution to tonight's mystery, but first... The control room cut our armchair detective's room off the air that night just in time as Nicky and I hurried around the table to Dr. McKean's chair.
He fell off his chair.
Doctor, Queen, I'm poisoned.
Poisoned?
By what, Dr. McKean? What's that?
Search Rosemary.
Doctor?
Search Rosemary? That's his wife. Dr. McKean. Ellery, call a doctor.
For what, Nicky?
Ellery, what's going on in here? What's happened to your guest?
Hey. Dead, Phil.
Dead? But we're still on the air.
Nicky, the poison is in that glass of water McKean just drank.
Our water? From the pitcher?
Pitcher's loaded with it, too. Smell this, Phil.
Huh? Oh, what am I doing? Ellery, for the love of Mike, we're still on. You've got to finish the show. Solve the murder.
Yeah, solve the murder. Phil, have this room guarded till we're off the air. Nicky?
Yes, Ellery.
Back to the mic.
I don't know how we got through the rest of the program. My mind's a blank on the whole thing. But the minute we went off the air that evening, Ellery hurried back to the guest room to solve a very different kind of murder. The murder of his own armchair detective.
No. I didn't, Inspector Queen. I didn't, I tell you.
Mrs. McKean, your husband's dying words were to search you.
Well, you didn't find anything on me, did you?
The idea of murder's ridiculous. Queen, my brother probably committed suicide.
Impossible, Bud. The
poison that killed him comes only in liquid form, so it must have been in a container.
And there's no poison container of any kind, either on Dr. McKing's body or in this room.
Inspector.
Billy.
I found it.
Ah.
The bottle's empty, Inspector, but smell it.
This is it, all right.
Sergeant, where'd you find that bottle?
On the floor of that glass-closed booth where Mrs. McKing, Bud McKing, and Miss Woolen were watching the broadcast, Maestro.
The client's booth?
Oh, Nicky, feeling better?
Oh, yes, all right. Well, no one else is in that booth, Inspector, just his wife, his brother, and his secretary.
Sort of simplifies it. Harry, you sure the water in this pitcher was okay when the McKing party first came in here with you and Nicky?
Before we went in the air? Positive, Dad.
Oh, Inspector, Ellery drank a glass full of it himself.
So one of these three dropped the poison into the pitcher before Miss Porter escorted him out.
Disposed of the empty bottle in the booth.
I'm afraid we forced the poisoner's hand, Nicky, by sending him into that booth.
Mrs. McKing, it looked as if your husband had noticed you fooling around with that pitcher.
If Marty had seen me drop poison into the water, would he have drunk any of it?
Rosemary's got a point there, Inspector.
He probably didn't get the significance of what he'd seen until he realized he was poisoned.
But when he does realize it, he says to search you for the bottle.
But why should I murder Marty? I loved my husband. I loved him dearly. Life won't be the same.
I'll say it won't.
Miss Woolen, what did you say?
Oh, nothing. Nothing.
What did you mean, Miss Woolen?
Yes, go on, Elsie. Say it.
All right, I will. Dr. McKing was the kindest husband in the world to her. And all she cared about was money. Money for clothes, furs, and jewelry. And when he had to close down her charge account, she poisoned him.
Out of revenge, huh, Miss Woolen?
No, for his estate. His will leaves everything to her. That's why Mrs. McKing poisoned him. For his money.
Well, Mrs. McKing?
What can I say, Mr. Queen, that I'm innocent? I've already told you that a dozen times. True, I've been extravagant, and I was angry when Marty clamped down on me, but commit murder for money? The man I loved?
Henry, come out with me a minute.
Oh, yes, Dad.
Shut the door.
Well, shut it.
It's shut, Dad.
Oh. Well, these blamed radio doors. What do you think, son?
I don't know.
The King did put the finger on his wife.
Well, it may have been no more than a stab in the dark, Dad. Certainly not enough to hold her on.
I think I'll send her home. Have Beely gum through the house on the QT. Might send Nicky home with her, too.
Good idea, Dad.
She could snoop out information where they wouldn't give us time of day.
Oh, blast it.
Sure, but what?
Well, Dad, ever since McKing said search Rosemary, I've had the weirdest feeling that...
That she meant something else?
I don't know. I had the feeling there's a clue. A clue I've missed or forgotten. A clue that ties in with McKing's dying words. Maybe something that happened during the...
Course. You got it?
No, Dad. No, but I know where I can get it.
Talk sense.
Well, they always make recordings for the Queen show, Dad. Now, you go ahead with your plans. I'm going to take a recording of tonight's show home and play it back. All night, if necessary. To spot that... whatever it is.
Rosemary in such a spot,
May I come in and chin for a while?
I'm sorry. It's after 3. What do you want?
Scared to death, huh?
Good night.
Oh, what's your hurry?
Your footman, McKean.
Oh, you're full of that murder op, too, aren't you? As you made you afraid of me.
Please take your foot away. I want to go to jail.
Don't think Ellery's pulling the wool over my eyes. You're a spy. He planted you here.
Let go of the door!
Monty wasn't murdered. It was suicide.
You've been drinking. Get out.
I know what you think, that I'm in love with Rosemary, that I killed my brother to get his wife.
If you don't go away,
I'll... There's never been a thing between Rosemary and me. Not a thing.
Sergeant Veely. Sergeant, you still down there?
Oh, Squatter, what's the matter?
Oh, nothing, Sergeant. I just want to make sure you were there.
Well, everything okay up there, Miss Pete?
Well, yes. I tucked Rosemary McKing into Betty by at 10:30. Miss Woolen went to her room hours ago.
Well, you sound shaky. You sure everything's all right?
Well, Sergeant, Martin McKing just came back to the house.
I know. I saw him go in, but he didn't try to sneak in, so... Maybe I better come in at that.
What was that?
Huh?
Oh, for heaven's sake.
What's wrong now, Miss
Porter? Don't you hear it, Sergeant? Sounds like someone was breaking up the house. I better go see what's
going on. No, wait till I...
Downstairs. Honey? Stop. Who's that downstairs? What happened?
Something in this jar.
Well,
unless the searcher beat us to it.
He missed it. There is.
A wad of typewriter paper.
Letter the king left there. What's it say, Ellery?
Dated 10 days ago. Due to a recent disturbing episode, I am writing this note as a precaution. If anyone finds it, I am the only one who uses the spice cabinet, so it is safe against accidental discovery. It will be because they are investigating my murder. The other night, a certain person close to me threatened my life. I was inclined to at first dismiss it as hysteria. Now I am not so sure. If anything happens to me, the person who threatened to kill me was...
Oh, Ellery!
Come on, Maestro!
It's Elsie Woolen, my secretary. Signed, Monty McKing.
Really? Get that Woolen girl down here.
Detectives and our guests in the studio compare solutions. Nikki?
Ellery, I'm happy to introduce the charming proprietress of one of Hollywood's most popular syndicated columns, Miss Sheila Graham.
Good evening, Miss Graham, and welcome to the armchair.
Thank you, but after listening to your mystery tonight, I'm a little worried about occupying this post.
Oh, you have nothing to be afraid of. Perhaps you'd like a glass of water to help you relax.
Heavens, no! That's the last thing in the world I'd want.
I can't say that I blame you. But now suppose we get down to business. Tell me, who do you think is the criminal in tonight's story?
Well, it's very complicated tonight.
Oh, sure.
But I think Miss Woolen, the secretary, did it.
I see. And
it was a very subtle murder. Mm-hmm. It takes a smart girl to murder a man like that, and took a lot of preparation. Secretaries are usually rather smart, and she knew this man.
And
she knew that he might get thirsty. He obviously got thirsty very often in his office. And also, he said that somebody very hysterically threatened his life previously.
You mean in the note he left?
Yes, in the note he left. Mm-hmm. And she was a very hysterical woman, so I think Miss Woolen did it.
Thank you very much, Miss Sheila Graham. We'll find out in just a moment if your solution is correct.
I don't care. I don't want to hear it. He's just too smart. Always knows the answer to mysteries.
Well, I want to hear it.
Nicky, pipe down. What have you got, Ellery?
Swelled head.
Nicky. Oh,
it's all right, Dad. It's that crack on the skull. Well, now, what was Dr. Monty McKing's profession?
What was he most famous for?
His radio program.
The King's English.
An authority on the correct usage of the English language.
Then let's take another look at that note we just found in the rosemary jar. I quote, "Due to a recent disturbing episode, I am writing," and so forth.
Something wrong there, Maestro?
Well, Sergeant, "due to" in that sentence is hopelessly incorrect.
Oh, it is, huh?
It should read, "because of a recent disturbance." I'm writing so forth. "Due to" can never be used adverbially.
Is that so?
And this, "if anyone finds it, it'll be because they are investigating my murder."
Anyone must be followed by he. One can't possibly mean the plural.
Oh, Miss Porter is with us again. Yes, Nicky. Another mistake. And this, "I was inclined to at first dismiss..."
A split infinitive.
A split in what?
In other words, this short note, purportedly from the pen of an authority on correct English, reveals not one, not two, but three of the commonest errors of usage. Incredible. Conclusion, Dr. McKing did not write the note.
It's a phony. I mean a forgery.
And since the note was not written by Dr. McKing, it was not left in the rosemary jar by Dr. McKing either. Someone else left the note in the jar, obviously the real writer of the note, the forger.
But Hillary, why? What was accomplished by it?
Well, a great deal, Dad. It made us believe that the word rosemary in Dr. McKing's dying statement, "search rosemary," meant rosemary the herb rather than rosemary the name of a woman. And who gains by our thinking that the victim was not accusing a woman named Rosemary, but was merely telling us to look for a note in a spice jar?
Only Rosemary McKing herself. She did poison her husband.
Tried to twist his accusation of her to mean something entirely different, because she had a guilty conscience.
So tonight, after I put her to bed, she forged her husband's signature to a note accusing Elsie Woolen, then sneaked downstairs, left the note in the rosemary jar as a blind...
And then Nicky deliberately led us to that jar.
Hey, wait a minute. Led us to the jar, Maestro?
Well, by wrecking the kitchen, Sergeant. What was that but a clever device to draw our attention to it? To make us search it and find her plant in the rosemary jar.
On her way back upstairs, she bumped into me in the dark and let me have it.
At that, Rosemary's attempt to lead us down a false trail might have succeeded, if only she'd learned from her victim the rules governing the English language.
Well, here's where she learned something about the rules governing murder. Really? Old Rosemary McKing?
Or the murder of my armchair detective.
Yes, sir.
Ladies and gentlemen, you have the solution to our mystery. Thank you again, Miss Sheila Graham, for serving as our guest armchair detective this evening. As mementos of the occasion, I have for you a copy of my latest mystery anthology, The Queen's Awards, 1947, and a subscription to Ellery Queen's Mystery Magazine. Ah, Paul. Feeling all right?
Well, I guess we're okay. There have been no calls yet asking if our armchair detective's really been knocked off.
And what are you worried about?
Among other things, Ellery, next week.
Never mind about next week.
What's the matter, Nicky? What gives next week that it darkens the fair brow and brings lightning into those beauteous orbs?
Why, Paul.
Well, it's nothing, Nicky. I guess you bring out the poet in me.
Paul.
Nicky.
Remember me?
Go away. Not you, Nicky.
Yes, I remember you, Ellery Q. And I remember that female, too.
What female?
Nicky's referring to next week's problem.
I'll say she was a problem.
What was her... its name, Ellery.
Well, you were right the first time, Paul. I call her... it. The Farmer's Daughter. This is Ellery Queen saying goodnight until next week, and enlisting all Americans every night and every day in the fight against bad citizenship, bigotry, and discrimination, the crimes which are weakening America.
The Adventures of Ellery Queen, on Tuned to Yesterday from March 18, 1948 on ABC. You are listening to An Hour of Mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now, a story from Edgar Allan Poe, adapted on Suspense, which first appeared in November of 1842 in the Snowden Lady's Companion. His story, The Mystery of the Marie Roget, is considered to be a sequel to what is known as literature's first detective mystery, The Murders in Rue Morgue. Next, Suspense brings us an adaptation of The Mystery of the Marie Roget from February 7th, 1960 on CBS.
Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Mary Cecilia Rogers was murdered in the vicinity of New York City in the summer of 1842. It was still an unsolved crime in November when The Mystery of Marie Roget was published. The author, Edgar Allan Poe. It paralleled in every essential detail the murder of Mary Rogers. Poe wrote it far from the scene of the atrocity, with only the newspaper reports of the day. Nevertheless, the subsequent confession connected with the murder of Mary Rogers confirmed not only the killer named by Poe, but all the chief details by which he arrived at his identification.
Good evening. My name is Dupin. I should like to extend an invitation. Regard first a certain event which truly occurred in New York City on a warm summer night in 1842. Secondly, I invite you to employ your imagination and displace that same event, intact with all of the essential facts, to a cobbled old world Paris on an identical warm and fragrant summer night in the same year. Lastly, and most interesting, I should like to invite you to attend that event. It is a murder. The general design and mental character of the atrocity, indeed the first knowledge of its occurrence, came to my attention on Wednesday night, the 25th day of June. Who is the prefect of police?
I am, monsieur. Dupin?
Yes, monsieur.
Oh, thank you for coming, monsieur. I wasn't certain my messenger would find you. No, this way, monsieur.
Please.
André, the lantern for Monsieur Dupin.
Oh, she died harshly.
Yes, yes, yes. Beaten, choked, drowned out, yes. Quite harshly, yes.
She was beautiful, monsieur.
Once, perhaps, yes.
Still. But Mademoiselle what? In life she had a name. In death she must also have a name. Any of you?
Monsieur, none of them know her, I have asked. But her clothes and jewels say she was known, Dupin. Good clothes, torn and disordered in her terrible struggle, but good. And the jewelry, not expensive, but tasteful. This woman, in my opinion, Dupin, was known.
And loved, Monsieur Prefect.
No doubt. Dupin... this is why I sent for you. I've been through these things before. The newspapers will write stories. Their reporters will make conjecture. Although there is no name for her now, there will eventually be a name. And then, monsieur, I will be called upon to produce her assassins. There is so little to go on. The eyes of the public will be upon me, and my honor is at stake.
And my honor too, Monsieur Prefect, if I am involved in the investigation.
Dupin, listen. There is a fund at the prefecture, a sizable fund which I am authorized to use when circumstances arise. For your services, I am willing to make a direct and liberal proposition. Dupin... you will help me to find the answer to this woman's death.
Inform about the mouth, as in the case of the merely drowned monsieur. Air bruises, impressions of fingers. It was a strangulation. By hand. And by this card, monsieur.
Yes. Doctor.
Monsieur Pain?
An ingenious knot in that cord, don't you think? This is a slip knot, a sailor's knot.
Sailor's knot. She was found in water. Why did she die, monsieur?
For her beauty, perhaps, for her love, her hate. It was Sunday.
Huh?
Observe, doctor. There are no marks to prove she was weighted and then shaken loose. Yes, she quit life on Sunday. Murdered in the dark, thrown into the river, unweighted. Monday, Tuesday, she remained as a corpse, wheel on the bottom. And then on the third day, tonight, as a corpse, wheel, she rose. She was murdered on the bank, then taken out to her grave in a boat. And there had to be a man who knew how to handle a boat in the tricky current.
Who's there?
It is I, the prefect. I have someone who thinks he may know her.
Come in, monsieur.
Ahead of me, please. With your permission, doctor, Monsieur Dupin, Monsieur Beauvais.
How do you do?
Monsieur Beauvais has been searching since Monday for news of a Marie Roget. Mademoiselle Roget is an employee of Monsieur Beauvais, correct, monsieur?
Yes, I am a perfumer. I called on her mother, Madame Roget, Monday when Marie did not appear at my shop. Madame informed me that Marie had left Sunday to visit her aunt at Rue des Drômes. She has not yet returned.
I see. And what else?
Well, I cannot say, monsieur. So far, I have ascertained that she never arrived at Rue des Drômes. And indeed, no one has seen her since Sunday. Not even Jacques Saint-Eustache.
Who is Jacques Saint-Eustache, Beauvais?
Monsieur Saint-Eustache is the accepted suitor of Marie Roget. He lodges and takes meals at the pension kept by Madame Roget. He was to have gone for his betrothed at dusk Sunday and to have escorted her home. In the afternoon, it rained heavily, and supposing that she would remain at her aunt's, he did not think it necessary to keep his promise. She has stayed there under similar circumstances.
And where is Jacques Saint-Eustache at this moment?
Searching and anxious as I am for Marie Roget. But where he went, I do not know.
It is 3 days since Sunday. 4 days, really. But three that Marie Roget has been considered missing. Your search is tardy.
I know, monsieur.
Well?
I am at your mercy. She has disappeared twice.
Ah.
The first time she disappeared was about 3 years ago. Her mother or friends were unable to account for her disappearance. I was distracted with anxiety and terror.
Did you notify the police?
In that case, immediately, sir. But suddenly, Marie reappeared one fine morning after being absent a whole week.
So you did not call the police this second time she disappeared?
Well, what has happened once, it can happen again, monsieur.
What did happen that week she was away?
I do not know. I do not honestly know.
But you doubt the story of visiting a relative?
I will not say.
Show him what we have, doctor.
If you will kindly step over here, Monsieur Beauvais. Now, Monsieur Beauvais, if you please. Do you know this woman, sir?
It is her! It is Marie Roget! Oh, it is her! Poor little Marie! Poor Marie!
Why does Beauvais cry, Dupin? The girl only worked for him. Ah, he has not told us all. He is suspect, Dupin, and I will have a word with him. Hein?
Stay.
But Dupin, why does he weep for a shop girl, a grisette who is promised to another?
He weeps for youth and beauty.
In just a moment, we will return for the second act of Suspense.
Our program will continue in a moment after a word about another fine product of Grove Laboratories. Does dandruff dull your hair, leave scalp itchy? Get Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo and get rid of unsightly dandruff in 3 minutes. 3 minutes with Fitch regularly is guaranteed to keep embarrassing dandruff away forever. Apply Fitch before wetting hair. Rub in 1 minute. Add water. Lather 1 minute. Rinse 1 minute. Every trace of dandruff goes down the drain. 3 minutes with Fitch, unsightly dandruff's gone. Fitch can also leave your hair up to 35% brighter. Fitch Dandruff Remover Shampoo.
Dupin again. You will recall the event we have been attending in Paris. I invite you now to keep in mind this solemn fact that Marie Roget died violently. That her lover, Jacques Saint-Eustache, is missing. Where she died, who administered her death, for what reason, remain to be known. Attend at this point another event, if you will, which was arranged by that zealous and righteous man, the prefect of police.
Ah, thank you for coming, Dupin.
You have located the lover, Saint-Eustache?
Saint-Eustache? Oh, no, he's unimportant, I assure you. Somewhere right now he drinks and tries to forget. But what I have here is important, most important. Madame Dulac, if you please.
Good evening, gentlemen. Good evening.
This is Madame Dulac. She has something of interest to tell you, and I have something of interest to show you.
Good evening, madame.
I have maintained this tavern many years, right here, close to the bank of the river.
No fear with me, madame. I have no authority to do anything but respect your person and your thoughts. What is this information?
I saw a young woman here Sunday. Monsieur says it was Marie Roger.
It was,
just
definitely.
Just a moment. Sunday?
Yes. Mid-afternoon, and later, perhaps.
Where?
Right here in my tavern. She arrived accompanied by a young man of dark, swarthy complexion. The two remained here for some time. On their departure, they took the road through some thick woods, that way.
Toward the river, Dupin. And this is a secluded neighborhood. Oh, go on, madame, go on, go on.
Soon after they left, a gang of miscreants made their appearance here. They behaved boisterously. They ate and drank without payment, then left and followed the route of the young girl and the young man. That same way.
I see.
About dusk, the same gang reappeared and recrossed the river in great haste.
I see. And you are certain it was Marie Roger?
Never fear. My men spoke with an omnibus driver, a man named Valence, who knew Marie Roger. He claims he saw her cross the Seine on the Sunday afternoon in question with a suave man who fits the exact description of Madame.
What else, monsieur?
I will show you. Come on.
I followed him through the back of the tavern into the thick woods which lined the Seine at that point. He stopped when we had come to a cross thicket, within which were three or four large stones, forming a kind of seat with a back and a footstool.
Note, Dupin, a white petticoat here, and here a silk scarf, parasol, gloves, pocket handkerchief. Inspect the handkerchief, Dupin.
Thank you.
You note the name Marie Roger embroidered there?
Yes. So this is the place she met her death.
Of course it is, and I have found it. Look, the earth is trampled where she struggled, and over here, bushes still broken. Every evidence of a terrible struggle. And here, the fence has been taken down, and the ground shows that some heavy burden was dragged along it, eh? Toward the river. Come, look for yourself. Ah, what do you say now?
I am wondering.
Wonder? We have facts now, sir. Important facts. Do you recall a strip of one of the unfortunate girl's petticoats had been tied about her mouth? Probably to prevent her screams?
I do.
This was done by fellows who had no pocket handkerchiefs. Miscreants, Dupin. Miscreants such as those who visited Madame Dulac's tavern and later went the same way as Marie Roger and her companion. There are many such gangs about here. Now, all we have to do is locate them, and I know how to do that.
Just a moment. We will return for the concluding act of Suspense. Pepsi-Cola refreshes without filling. Why? Because it's truly light.
Charlie, you're forgetting something.
Wait, Kay, there's more. Yes, ice-cold Pepsi is the delicious refreshment that goes great at a picnic or a party.
But, Charlie...
And Pepsi goes fast. People like it, so keep plenty handy. There.
Oh, you did fine, except for one thing.
Well, I mentioned lightness and how Pepsi refreshes and how fast it goes.
You left out Pepsi sociability. You know the Be Sociable song.
But, Kay, I can't sing.
I can. Listen.
Be sociable, not smart. Keep up to date with Pepsi. Drink light, refreshing Pepsi.
Well, at least I can say this. Pick up an extra carton of Pepsi today.
Please do.
That night, the shrill cries of the Paris newsboys proclaimed the prefect's resolve. He offered a reward of 20,000 francs and a full pardon for any king's evidence. It was an accepted conclusion that Marie Roger had been waylaid and slain by a gang of miscreants in the vicinity of Madame Dulac's tavern.
Well, now you defeated Monsieur Dupin, now that I have solved the mystery of Marie Roget.
No, monsieur.
I have doubled the reward. Soon one of the miscreants will come forward. Then you will see. 40,000 francs should be temptation enough.
20,000 was temptation enough.
What?
No one will come forward, sir. A gang such as he is hoped for would be composed of men who have never seen more than 100 francs at one time. 20,000 would bring all of them, if they had any knowledge of Marie Roget's murder.
They are just waiting, you know that.
Waiting? When each is in jeopardy because of the other?
Oh, we shall see, Dupin. Wait.
It was one man.
Huh?
A man who dragged the body of Mademoiselle to the river's edge. A gang, even two men, could have carried it. A gang would have lifted it over the fence easily instead of taking a fence down, as it was taken down. One man labored hard.
My conjecture is as good as yours. Are you talking of Saint-Eustache?
No. He is quite unguilty. Monsieur, allow me to point out that the newspapers, the police, all have identified themselves with what apparently happened. We must consider what did not happen. First, a gang did not set upon her and murder her. Secondly, Marie Roget had no intention of visiting her aunt at Rue des Drômes when she left her mother and lover last Sunday morning.
Dupin, if you have confidential information, explain yourself.
I have the same information as you, nothing else.
You said she had no intention of visiting her aunt that day. Why do you say that?
Monsieur, consider what might have happened if her intended, Jacques Saint-Eustache, had called for her at her aunt's and discovered she was not there, that she had not been there all day. He would have been chagrined, suspicious, angry. Saint-Eustache would have been all of these. Something for Marie Roget to worry about when she returned home. But nothing to worry about if Marie did not intend to return home.
A point to consider, perhaps. Go on.
Consider that she kept a rendezvous instead. This we know. A rendezvous with a swarthy man. We have been told by two witnesses who saw him. Now, monsieur, I ask you, as I have asked myself, did this swarthy companion allow Marie to be slain before his eyes? Or was he himself slain trying to help her? If so, where is his body?
He left her before. She was set upon, obviously.
Did he leave her alone in such a dark district?
Would they quarrel?
Indeed they did. Another question. Marie Roget's death is known everywhere in France. Why has he not come forward to help us clear up the mystery?
For many reasons. Perhaps he's married. He has left. He's uninformed.
He has a swarthy complexion. A sea complexion. A well-attested fact. Now accumulate that with the cord that was tied about her neck in a sailor's knot.
Monsieur Dupin, I cannot...
And the need of a skilled boatsman to handle a boat on the river to dispose of the body.
But it could be anyone.
No, it could not.
Huh?
Marie Roget was a gay, not an abject girl. And no common seaman for her. An officer. A naval officer, monsieur. Like the one who might have led her into a false elopement the first time she disappeared. 3 years pass. The approved time for a French man of war to consume encircling the globe. The officer returns, thinking of the same coquette, Marie Roget, the same bargain. What he has managed to do once, he can do again. Marie meets him Sunday for this purpose. Then she thinks the better of an elopement and refuses to accompany him. Saint-Eustache has captured her love. Her former lover slays her in quick anger, and he drags her body to the river, commandeers a boat and...
Where do I find him?
On whatever ship has arrived from the world cruise.
His name? What is his name, Dupin?
Inquire for the name of the young officer who has applied for leave to get married.
But there must be many such among a ship's complement returning after a long cruise.
Agreed. But, Monsieur Prefect, there is only one naval officer who has returned to his ship without a bride.
André! André! We leave at once for the naval yards.
It has been an interesting evening. And now I issue a last invitation, my friends. I invite you to retain all that you have earned and employ this time, instead of your imagination, your sense of reality. For Mary Roget of Paris was truthfully Mary Rogers of New York. Let your reality move you back to New York City on a winter day, some months after the event described, in the darkening afternoon, inside a gray stone building. I invite you to attend another event I think you will find significant.
Anson Robert Bryant Wilson, you have been found guilty of the murder of Mary Cecilia Rogers. It is the judgment of this court that you be hanged by the neck until you are dead.
Suspense. You've been listening to The Mystery of Marie Roget, a story by Edgar Allan Poe, written for Suspense by E. Jack Newman. In a moment, the names of our players and a word about next week's story of Suspense. Heard in tonight's story were Jackson Beck as Dupin, Bob Dryden as the prefect, and Guy Rapp as Beauvais. Others in our cast included Abby Lewis, Jim Bowles, Ethel Everett, and Ronald Dawson. Listen again next week when we return with the radio classic, first broadcast on Suspense, May 25th, 1943. Sorry, Wrong Number, starring Agnes Moorehead. Another tale well calculated to keep you in Suspense on CBS Radio.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday from the 7th of February, 1960 on CBS. And that wraps up this hour of mystery on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for listening.